Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about Lady Bird and Wonderstruck. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, dear Smell.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theaters, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello.
Hello.
Greetings.
So we are preparing ourselves for food, biryani, with our friend Jeannie.
Preparing for food is one of the best times of the day.
Getting ready for a meal.
Yeah.
Yes, the anticipation.
Yes.
And this is some place that we haven't been to. Well, yes, you've been there, right?
Yes. Paradise Biryani Point.
So I have mixed feelings about biryani. It used to be one of my favorite things when I had knew nothing about Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an Indian food, Indian restaurant near our university, which served biryani, which was basically a mixed vegetable curry with some rice. With a couple of vegetables in it. And I thought that was biryani. And then...
And then you got an education.
And then Rashmi made biryani, which was rice with food stirred into it and an egg, almost always. In your
layers.
Biryani.
It's layers. The one I do is layers.
Okay. Which is very good, by the way. I'm not complaining about that. And then we've had biryanis where it feels like they've chopped random bits of forest and thrown it in there. Very spicy, too.
A lot of aromatics. So
it's supposed to be very aromatic. It's a North Indian dish with a lot of... You know, the aromatic spices, the cardamom and cloves and ginger and garlic and nutmeg and, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's this idea of is it rice that's cooked into a medley of a curry that's got stock in it? Or is it layers of plain rice with goodies like a lasagna in some ways?
I think it's the latter.
Personally, I agree with you, Yazdi, but I think a lot of people will call a dish that's cooked, has rice cooked into it, a biryani. So I would call that a pilau rice, personally.
Correct.
I'm guessing there are regional variations in biryani.
Totally.
Yes. There's Hyderabadi biryani and then, you know, North Indian and so forth, yes.
Okay, so it's not like the stuff that I used to eat at university.
No. You can't make a lamb curry and mix it with rice and call it a biryani.
That's literally what they did. Well, no, it's mixed veg curry, I think.
Okay. But you're supposed to layer it with rice and then whatever your curry is and then
potatoes,
rice again, then fried potatoes.
Then onions.
Then fried onions, then a layer of chutney, like a coconut chutney
Boiled eggs, my mom would throw in there.
And then rice again and then you bake the whole thing and then at the time of serving you kind of... You know, scoop
mix
down.
Mix it all together. It out, yes.
Ooh, I'm excited now.
Yeah.
And saffron.
Yes.
Saffron I like. Cardamom I can do without.
Yes.
What was that one place that we went to that they had like, it literally felt like had bits of wood in it.
It did.
Every
it
mouthful.
Did.
I was constantly.
Yeah. You couldn't chew. It was kind of disappointing because you couldn't chew a mouthful of food for how your teeth would bite down
bite
on
into
bits,
something.
Which is
yeah.
Well, I always felt like I wanted to spit bits out, which was really not fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about our two... Well, I've got no...
Nothing to do with movies.
I know. Sorry. My stomach's getting to that point in the day where it needs food. So let's before we go to our reviews, let's do our usual I can't find anything to watch on Netflix segment, which is where we tell you what we have got going on in Netflix. So, guys, what do you have in your Netflix queues?
So I have a movie from about 10 years ago called Michael Clayton. We were talking about George Clooney in our last podcast with Suburbicon. And this is what Clooney does best for me. He's playing a fixer in this movie by Tony Gilroy. It has an amazing cast, including Tilda Swinton and Tom Wilkinson. It still feels topical somewhat. It's a political drama. It's a whodunit. It's a brilliant thriller with great acting.
Yeah.
Love this. Michael Clayton.
And one of those strange quirks of Oscar history that of all the amazing work that Tilda Swinton has done in her remarkable film career, this is the one for which she got an Oscar.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The only Oscar she has is Best Supporting Actor for Michael Clayton.
Yeah. And she's done amazing
work. She's good in it. Yeah. But when is she not?
Great pick. Yes, Dee, what you got?
The holidays approach with Thanksgiving coming soon and then, you know, the big one. And so, you know, I'm going to recommend a movie that is forever my comfort food. It's a movie which always brings me happiness and joy. And it's probably my favorite Tim Burton movie. I know he's not your favorite, Joseph. But it's the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas.
I love this movie.
And it's just, I can watch this movie on auto loop forever.
Oh,
and
God.
This is like Yorgos Lanthimos for Joe.
No. You know, I watch this
somewhat.
Movie, I watch this movie with Rashmi back in the...
back in the day.
Back in the early days of our dating. And yes. I couldn't stand it.
Was it annoying or was it just
so
pointless?
Tim Burton has a style to him that isn't necessarily compatible with me, although I did like his last movie, Big Eyes. But there is something that rubbed me up the wrong way about the song in this movie. And it felt very, very contrived, and it was trying to, it felt like it was trying to be clever. And so I refused to like it being the pretentious 20-year-old something that I was, thinking that I knew all about movies. So instead of letting it wash over me, which is I think probably what I should have done, I was trying to make it more than it was.
Yeah, and I think it's a different style of animation.
It's a labor of love. It's stop motion animation. It's very, very difficult to do. You know, you essentially shoot 26 whatever 48 you know, you take 48 shots per second, and then you know you very painfully create motion. And it's just delightful. It's about this, you know, kind of...
Pumpkinhead.
Jack Skellington, who is kind of a Grinch-like character who wants to steal and kidnap Santa Claus and, you know, kind of send out, you know, horrible gifts to children instead of the gifts they want. And ultimately, everything goes well. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. It's a part of my life. I love it.
I'm not sold, but it's there on Netflix, so I might give it another go.
Yes.
My pick of the week is it's actually a very different one to the one you've chosen, both of you, is a horror movie by the name of Oculus.
Brilliant movie.
Oculus came out a couple of years ago. We caught it, I'm not sure, did we review it on the show?
Maybe we did, yeah.
Written and directed by Mike Flanagan, and... So, the long and short of Oculus is it's about a mirror, I guess. No, it's about it's a tragedy that struck the Russell family, leaving lives of teenagers, Tim and Kaylee, forever changed. It is a horror film. I won't pretend to you that it's not scary. It's more of a thriller, I thought, than an out-and-out horror movie. But it did feel...
I would say it's a psychological thriller with horror elements.
Right.
If you choose to see it that way.
Absolutely. But it's a wonderful movie. I remember all of us kind of liked it, and I think it did rather well critically.
Yazdi was too scared to come and watch.
Yazdi, you didn't see this one?
I did not watch it.
Okay, but...
and it was scary. It is scary.
I
wouldn't watch it on my own.
I won't tell you to watch it.
Yeah, I agree.
On the pretense that it's something like It. But it's definitely one of my more memorable movies of that year. So, three very different movies.
Yes.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Michael Clayton.
And Oculus. Plenty to watch on Netflix. Go check them out. Right, let's get on with our podcast. So we have two movies, neither of which I've seen again, unfortunately. Lady Bird and Wonderstruck. So I'll let you guys decide which order we review them in.
I'll do Wonderstruck. I think I'm the only one that saw that one, so I can make this fairly...
Do you want me... Yes.
Yes.
Should I introduce
Please
it?
Please do, Yasti.
So Wonderstruck is the latest from director Todd Haynes, who most recently last year made Carol, which got a lot of Oscar love. And of course, Todd Haynes has made a lot of movies, Safe and Velvet Goldmine and Far From Heaven. And he directed Mildred Pierce on HBO.
So good.
And then following the huge success of Carol here, he's with Wonderstruck, which seems to be outside of his normal play wheel because it tells the parallel stories of two kids. One in black and white, one in color, which are separated almost by 50 years. And I understand that what unites the two stories, which are playing out in different periods of time, is the fact that both of those kids are hearing impaired. And that's about the extent of, what is known about the plot for this movie. It stars his, usual suspects such as Julianne Moore is here, and then Millicent Simmons and Lauren Ridloff is here, and then several other names that I don't recognize. But I think Julianne Moore is the you know, is the big name actor here. So Rashmi, you're the only one who saw it. I really want to see this. I usually like Todd Haynes movies.
Yeah, so, you know, we've had some really great performances by children this year. And this is, again, an example of Oakes Fegley, who plays one of the main characters, Ben, and Millicent Simmons, who plays Rose. And they're the two kids that have the parallel lives. Really great performance. So I'll start with that from the outset. I love this idea that two people can live somewhat parallel lives in different times. But I think as a movie, that piece of it came off a little gimmicky for me and over plotty. Because the story is more of a feeling to me. And I think this is more like an adult fairy tale versus a regular narrative that you can really hang your hat on and feel like you've got a true arc of the characters or something that you can really hold on to. That said, I think there's a lot of things to admire about this movie, which is great production because it's dealing with two completely different
time periods.
Again, I think, you know, great acting by the kids. I think Julianne Moore, although she's not in it a lot, you know, again, it's a very different Julianne Moore. She's working really hard.
Yeah, I was going to say that. She's been in almost every podcast for three or four weeks.
Yeah.
It feels like.
I think the piece for me is that, and it's interesting because this little boy was actually Pete in Pete's Dragon. But this film lacks the emotionality of a movie like A Monster Calls for me. So whereas with A Monster Calls, you have a child in adversity, and here you have children who are in difficult situations, I didn't quite connect with this movie.
Do the two stories play out separately or they're kind of interwoven? Does it keep going back and forth between them?
It keeps going back and forth between them. But clearly there's a 50-year difference between them.
And is it about the difficulty with being deaf? Or that's just...
There is an element of that, and the reasons why they're deaf is very different.
Okay.
Because
we seldom see movies about anybody
impaired.
Who is hearing impaired. Yeah.
But again, I think it becomes very forced. One of the stories is almost like fitting somewhat of an oval peg into a square hole. So I think there's a better way to tell this story. I'm clearly not a filmmaker, so I don't know how that would be done. But the mechanism by which it's told just came off, I think, more gimmicky than something you can really hang on to. And I think I'm not sure if it wasn't for that gimmick that it would be getting the praise it's getting. Of course, it's a parallel story, but really it's not. There's one element that's parallel in some ways. You know, I get that it's about wanting human connection and I don't want to give too much away. These are kids alone that have to do certain parts of the story on their own.
The reviews have been kind of divided into two camps. And one camp says that this is the rare misstep for Todd Haynes, where he just has failed in telling this story in this particular way. And then the other camp is that this is a very sweet kind of almost a wistful story about movies, which is a minor Todd Haynes film, but it's still kind of part of his filmography. And I suspect you belong to the former camp, more of a misfire.
Yeah, for another reason, though. I mean, I do agree that this is a very sweet parable of some sort, but I didn't quite get a lesson out of it, if that makes sense. I feel like it's trying to impart some sort of lesson or message that I can't quite put my arms around. It's a nice movie is how I would describe it. It's such a nice movie. Nice is the adjective I would use rather than endearing or sweet or mesmerizing. Right. It's not any of those for me. It's admirable. I just didn't manage to connect with it emotionally at all.
Okay.
So I would say overall, very average 5 out of 10 for me.
Okay.
I wasn't wonderstruck.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean,
again, it's not a bad movie. I think it's a perfect movie to watch on the back of a plane, really.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a late release by Amazon Studios, which is, again, very interesting to me that Amazon is in the film game. And, you know, they did very well last year with Manchester by the Sea. Do you think this was a deliberate release targeted for awards season?
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to movie number two of the week then, which is Lady Bird. And I'll introduce that one very briefly. So, written and directed by our very favorite Greta Gerwig. Huge fans of Greta Gerwig here on the podcast, although mostly as an actor. This is a directorial debut, I believe, by Greta Gerwig here, which hopefully she has had some coaching. Is she still romantically linked to Noah Baumbach?
I'm not sure, but she did co-direct Mistress America and co-wrote Mistress America with Noah Baumbach.
Okay.
So, but this is her first solo outing as writer and director.
Okay, terrific. And, you know, in some ways we could see this coming, right? This is somebody who has been very involved with a specific kind of film since, you know, breaking onto the screen a few years ago. We've been huge fans of her work here, and I think, you know, she's the kind of archetypal Noah Baumbach female protagonist, and, you know, we're kind of excited anytime we hear Greta Gerwig mentioned. So, here she partners with a fellow cast, a number of cast members, Saoirse Ronan, Laurie Metcalf, Tracy Letts, among others. Timothy Chalamet, interestingly, is in this movie, who we had nothing but good things to say about in the recent review that we had with Call Me By Your Name. So, very briefly, again, I'll go with the synopsis that is here on Rotten Tomatoes. In Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig reveals herself to be a bold new cinematic voice with her directorial debut, excavating both the humor and pathos in the turbulent bond between a mother and her teenage daughter. Christine, Lady Bird McPherson, played by Saoirse Ronan, fights against, but is exactly like her wildly loving, deeply opinionated and strong-willed mother, played by Laurie Metcalf, a nurse working tirelessly to keep her family afloat, after Lady Bird's father, Tracy Letts, loses his job. So it's an R-rated movie, which is, you know, interesting to me. My mind doesn't go there when I think about a Greta Gerwig-directed movie. Guys, what did you think about this? This is doing incredibly well critically. So are you in that camp?
So when I came out of the movie and the studio rep asked me for my input, my opinion, I used a term which I hadn't used in a long term, which is completely befitting this movie, which is that I wanted to give the movie a hug. You know, I really want to give this movie a hug, and I continue to want to give this movie a hug. And I think even saying that seems to be a bit of a disservice to the movie, because it makes it feel like the movie is twee and precious. And I think the whole movie is a giant balancing act. There is nothing we haven't seen before. It's a coming-of-age story. It's very, very autobiographical, because I understand Greta Gerwig grew up in Sacramento, which is where this movie is set, and it's the last year in the life of a girl who is going to leave college and move on. And it's about her coming to terms with her family, with her romantic life, with, you know, who she wants to be, you know, where she wants to land in the world. So it's by definition the coming of age movie, but every step of it is note perfect. I hesitate again, because this is such a, like, you know, we've talked about the Florida Project, and we talked about what was the other one? You know, even Call Me By Your Name. These are all such gentle, sweet, inwardly looking movies that if you overhype them, somebody's going to go and expect the meaning of life out of them, and they're not going to get it. So I say people should just go see this movie for the sweet, perceptive, brilliantly written, perceptively directed movie that it is. I remember when we were doing, and I promise I'll stop in a minute. I remember when we were doing the podcast for Mistress America, I mentioned that, you know, Greta Gerwig is kind of she's a stealth person, because not only is she great in front of the screen, but she had written an amazing script for Mistress America. By the way, she co-wrote Mistress America and Frances Ha with Noah Baumbach, but she never has directed before or even co-directed. This is her first director. And the writing here is just I mean, I want to like record this, the entire, I want to read the screenplay for this movie and highlight things, because line by line, it's just beautiful. So I have great, great, great affection for this movie.
We are 3 for 3. 3 podcasts. I agree with Yazdi.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Greta Gerwig, because even behind the camera, when we can't see your delightful face, we hear your delightful voice and see your vision of this beautiful coming-of-age story coming together. This is stunningly acted and mesmerizingly penned, is how I would describe it, Yazdi. This is an earnest movie and a funny story about growing up. And I think for those of us who grow up questioning things, much to the chagrin of our families, this shows us that we're not abnormal or crazy. Mm. It's just that many people don't question. And so for me, yes, you always say sometimes it's not what you watch, it's kind of what you bring to the movie. For me, it's autobiographical in the sense of it's difficult when you feel different to those around you. And here is a person who is trying to express that difference in a physical way sometimes.
Square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think it, and like Yazdi said, it's so easy for this movie. It would have been so easy for this movie to become Precious or Twee. And it never does. It sometimes goes up to the border, but then it does things which are very raw. And she goes there. And I didn't expect her to go there. And you know, every character, every single one, whether they're doing 5 lines or 25 lines, are so well and fully written. And the emotionality is captured perfectly. I mean, this captures not only, you know, first love, first sexual experience, but also that, being part of the cool crowd and, you know, being true to yourself, to those friends who you've been friends with for many, many, many years, even though they may not be perceived as cool, all while taking place in this, in the confines of a Catholic school. So it adds another layer of depth, which I really, really like. And, you know, this has Hedges, the guy from
Lucas Hedges from Manchester by the Sea.
Again, great performance. Not in it very long, but great performance. And of course, Timothy Chalamet. Again, great performance. I mean, these are young actors who are no flashes in the pan. I mean, I can't wait to see what this group of actors do. I mean, and of course, Saoirse Ronan. I mean, this is a different Saoirse Ronan than we've seen before, and a flawless American accent.
Is it funny?
Yes.
Very.
Okay, because yes. I would imagine a Greta Gerwig movie to be, but it's also an offbeat comedy.
Yeah, but it's also tender and it's real and it's angry and it's challenging. It's all of those things.
So one of my favorite movies last year, which got it really, you know, it didn't get its due. We all loved it, was Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. You know, and that movie is just dripping with sweetness and real sweetness. This movie is not sweet the whole way through. It's not. You know, the main character is frustrating and she is
caustic.
She's caustic and she has love, but she's also vain and she's immature and she is not necessarily always doing the right things and not, you know, not very
sounds
focused.
Sounds like a teenager to me.
Yeah, and she's arrogant.
That's why she nails it, because that's what, it's the teenager's world, and it's because, you know, it's because it's this amalgamation of all these conflicting things that it feels like a real person. And, you know, and to, again, to, you know, to Greta Gerwig's great credit, she doesn't just extend that to the main character. Every other character is allowed to be complicated and contrary. You know, look at the character of her mom. You know, and again, we were talking about best supporting actor nominations. Yep. Laurie Metcalf, I think she has it, you know, locked and put in the bank. She's going to get nominated.
Wow.
Yeah, she is amazing.
Not necessarily, again, has one major scene where, you know, she, you know, breaks the rafters or anything. But, you know, like you said, Lucas Hedges and Timothy Chalamet and the actor who plays her best friend, Odea, somebody.
Oh, my God. She's wonderful.
She's wonderful. And, you know, it's about, I mean, anybody who's grown up, you know, will absolutely empathize with the whole point of, you know, you're always looking to kind of what's the right word, trade up with your friends, you know, because you have to survive in the social hierarchy of the university or the college. And you're always trading down your good friends in search of better, cooler friends. It's a horrible thing to say, but that's how a lot of, you know, your high school years work. And the movie really addresses this in a really, it could have been so cliched, and it's handled so beautifully here. Again, I hesitate to make too much of this movie because there's nothing that you haven't seen here before, but it's all just such a beautiful package. And the writing more than anything else. God, the writing.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I was worried because, again, this is another one we've been really looking forward to. It's made its rounds around the prestigious film festivals, and people were hailing its praises. I think Toronto. Mm-hmm. I was worried going into this one, but I mean, I can wind this one up. Look, Lady Bird, Never Fly Away Home. Greta Gerwig, keep making lots of movies for us to love. Oh my God, I want to give it another 9 out of 10. I think I'll give it an 8 out of 10. Solid 8 out of 10. Because it is a coming of age movie, and it doesn't necessarily bring us anything more than, you know, Call Me By Your Name or some of the other great coming of age movies we've seen this year. But solid. Loved it.
Yes, D.
Yeah, it's again a great case of you don't need to reinvent the wheel. If you just tell your own story authentically, then that's enough. And, you know, I cannot wait for Hollywood as a whole and the world as a whole to recognize Greta Gerwig for the clear triple threat she is now. I mean, she's a wonderful, delightful presence in front of the camera. She writes like a dream. And now, you know, she has this ability to direct these wonderful actors. So I think more than anything else, this is a great coming out kind of party for Greta Gerwig. I hope it's a very competitive field this year, but nothing would make me happier if she just got nominated for Best Director.
Wow.
Do
you think that's a possibility? I mean,
I don't know. It's
too
small. Is
this big enough a movie?
I think it's too small a movie.
It's too small a movie, but, you know, she deserves it.
She might get like a best screenplay, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
It might get a best screenplay.
I'm looking at the Tomatometer right now. 100%.
Yeah.
81 reviews counted. All fresh.
Mm.
That is so rare.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think can pick up some.
Yeah.
I hope it catches.
Yeah.
Some,
I mean, what's
attention.
Interesting is so she's still apparently dating Noah Baumbach. Noah Baumbach just released his movie for 2017 called The Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected, on directly onto Netflix. I watched it. Starring, you know, again, a great cast. Robert De Niro, Ben Stiller, Adam Sandler.
Emma Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, but to me, I think if I had to compare the two, and I hate to do that because they are generally a writing team and they work together and they collaborate, Lady Bird stands arms and legs and wings above the Meyerowitz Stories.
Yeah. I mean, every character here, it just feels real, and there is, you know, even, I mean, there's three scenes in the movie for the nun at the Catholic school.
Yeah, she's going. Great.
And Lois Smith, who plays the nun, she's so good. She says one thing in the movie.
It's hilarious.
And she's hilarious, but there's one piece of advice she gives the character, and it just completely stuck with me. And it's not funny, but it's so perceptive. And clearly, I don't know if her nun actually told that to, you know, Greta Gerwig when she was growing up, or she just wrote it, but it's a beautiful thing. So,
well, Joe is the Catholic schoolgoer amongst us.
So you should check it out.
I definitely want
to do. Again, I fear this will not meet up to your expectations now that we've overpraised it, but it's a very easy 8.5 for me. I'm going to back up to an 8 as well. I don't know why I'm not giving it a 9. But
yeah,
I almost need to see it again. I need to see it again because while I was watching it, I was kind of like, okay, thrill me. And it's very annoying to go in with very high expectations.
Yes.
So it kind of bothered me. Mm-hmm. I almost need, now that I've seen the whole movie, I need to kind of go in and watch it again and kind of soak in it a little bit.
Relax.
Yeah, relax.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like watching, like, you know, oh, our little Greta's going to do a directing debut and you want it to be so good because we love her so much and we know what she's capable of. And you're like, phew, that was good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And now we want to go to...
for it at the beginning. Yeah. Yeah, and I want to see it simply because it's Greta Gerwig. And, you know, Saoirse Ronan is a very agreeable screen presence as well. So, just the fact that, you know, they're working together is awesome for me. So, terrific stuff. Two movies this week, Wonderstruck and Lady Bird. Do you know when Lady Bird actually opens? We'll have to
take a look at that because
it's not available right now as I'm as we're recording this on November 5th. But
I have the date.
I have the date as well. I can.
It's the 10th.
Terrific.
So, it's this coming week. Yeah.
Good. It's a limited release, and I do know that from the Rotten Tomatoes thing. So hopefully this is one that will gain some traction, if nothing else, for its critical acclaim. All right, so let's wrap up for today. Mail at moviewallahs.com, twitter.com/moviewallahs, facebook.com/moviewallahs as well.
Instagram.moviewallahs.
Do Instagram as well. We do occasionally post pictures, so we should do that more. And do interact with us there. Like us. We like getting likes. So,
before we finish, can I do a shout out to A24?
Please. Of course.
Which is a distribution company right now, which is seemingly picking the best films, and this year alone they're releasing Lady Bird, Killing of a Sacred Deer, and The Florida Project.
Wow.
And they have, you know, they have released
that's incredible,
and The Disaster Artist, which is coming out. They released Free Fire earlier this year. They released A Ghost Story. They released Moonlight last year, The Lobster. So this is a great, you know, production company which is going to film festivals, picking out movies and bringing them to our doorsteps. So good on A24.
Yay for A24. Yes. I would put all of those movies probably in my top 10.
Yeah.
Except A Ghost Story, which I still want you guys to go and see.
Yeah, well, if we could see it anywhere, we would. That's
good time as well. And Menashe is A24.
Really? Yes. Good Time, yes. And we haven't even had a chance to talk about Good Time because we saw that as civilians. Yeah. With an amazing performance by Robert Pattinson. I'm just squeezing them all in, Joe.
Good for you. All right, let's end up here. So until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. Gosh, it's always the case this end of the year. And yeah, they're cramming them in. I mean, I was only away for a week and a half. It felt like I missed about 9 movies. So yeah, it's good
times.
And
a lot of direct releases to Netflix too that we're watching and trying to catch up on as well.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll have to start thinking about what the award seasons are going to look like. Because I had that conversation with somebody at work actually a day or two ago. They were like, what are the big Oscar buzz
movies
this year?
We still have some on our list to watch.
I couldn't actually pick any that I thought were kind of buzzworthy. So we should maybe wrap up and think about that in a podcast coming to you near sometime soon.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to sign off. Too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.